Good evening. The Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come back to order. It will come to order. This is Wednesday, March 14th, 2012. And as you may know, this is the beginning of our deadline week, so if our legislators aren't entirely in the room, it just means that we're scattered all over the place doing the people's work in a variety of committees. We will have one committee hearing tonight, Senate File 2319, that's Senator Newman, involving the subject of controlled substances, schedule alignment. These are basically around synthetic drugs. Senator Newman, thank you for presenting this bill and bringing it forward. You can start anytime.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and Mr. Chairman, I have here in the room also the co-author of the bill with me on this. I wonder if it'd be okay if he would join me at the testifying table.
Absolutely. Senator Riker. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can get an up-close and personal idea of whether you someday want to serve on the Judiciary Committee.
I already know the answer to that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to mention before we get started that, you know, please feel free to take all the time that you want on this bill tonight because I go from here to Health and Human Services.
That's the one committee I don't want to serve on. Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Senate File 2319 is a bill in which, frankly, what we're trying to do is stay ahead of the production of new drugs and chemicals that are hitting the street, which apparently are legal, but really should be illegal to both possess and to sell, and under our current scheme of laws, they are not. And I would indicate to you that this is a bill that is similar to what we worked on last year with synthetic marijuana and analogs. And what we're going to try and do now is take another shot at it and bring it up to date a little bit. Mr. Chairman, in order to get the bill into the form that I would like to have, I would at this time offer the A1 amendment. And I wonder if maybe Mr. Backus could walk us through it.
Senator Newman offers an author's amendment, the A1 amendment. Does everyone have the A1 amendment? Senator Newman, we'll wait for the A1 to be passed out to the members. Would you want to start explaining it?
Certainly. I'll go into the explanation of the bill. And what I'm going to try and do with this explanation, if you notice, once you get into the heart of the bill, at least for me, there's absolutely nothing in there that I understand. It almost doesn't look like it's written in English, to be real honest. So what I'm going to do is just kind of walk you through the bill in broad strokes, and then after that, I'm going to turn this presentation over to the testifiers and have them give you the detail of it. But your starting point, I think, is on page 1, line 12. In prior law, we have established five schedules of controlled substances. And those five schedules in your bill, Schedule 1 is found on page 1, beginning at line 16.
Senator Newman, can I interrupt? Everyone has the A1 amendment. I'd like to get the bill in the shape that you would want.
Do we have a quorum, Mr. Chairman?
Apparently not. We'll just keep going then.
Maybe you could interrupt me when we do, and we will move
amendment. I'll be more than happy to interrupt you.
Thank you. Schedule 2, controlled substances, members, you will find beginning to be listed on page 10, beginning at line 28. You've got the Schedule 3 substances on page 13 at line 28, and Schedule 4 is on page 19 beginning at line 6, and Schedule 5 controlled substances on 21, or page 21 beginning at line 20. And in each of these five scheduled controlled substances, the bill is adding new chemicals or compounds to those various schedules. The next part of the bill that I would want to direct your attention to, Mr. Chairman, would be on page 27. And what we are doing on page 27 is including synthetic cannabinoids, it's a tough word to say, in terms of criminal penalties. And if you note that on line 8, what is being said there is that if a person gives away a synthetic cannabinoid, it is a gross misdemeanor. If you sell it, it becomes a felony. And under current law, that is unchanged. If a person possesses it, it remains a misdemeanor.
Senator Newman, can I interrupt you now?
Yes, you certainly can.
We do have a quorum. And I'd like to get on to the A1 amendment. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Senator Newman, I won't interrupt you again.
Mr. Chairman, I'm almost done. In any event, from page 27, where I have just outlined the changes in the criminal penalties, and again, it goes from a misdemeanor for possessing, gross misdemeanor if you give it away, a felony if you sell it, and the specific compounds that are affected by the sale or possession described beginning at line 27.5, you will find from page 8, line 21, through page 10, line 25. So it's page 8, 21, through 10, page 10, line 25. Those are the chemicals that we are dealing with in this penalty portion of the bill on line or on page 27. And then the only other thing is we've got an effective date in here of August 1st, 2012, in terms of the effective date, I guess the thought did cross my mind. I wonder why we're starting in August rather than immediately after passage. But the committee can take that up if they wish. With that explanation, Mr. Chairman and members, I would at this time turn over to Mr. Weiberg from the Board of Pharmacy and have him walk you through and explain to you why this bill is necessary and why he believes it will help us in keeping up with our street chemists.
Mr. Weiberg, welcome to the committee.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. Just a very brief bit of background. The Board of Pharmacy is a state agency that has authority under rulemaking process to add drugs to the schedules, which is why we're involved. It might otherwise seem odd that the agency that regulates pharmacy is involved in this issue. The genesis of this particular bill was in the interim when I was approached by Representative Barrett to potentially put some changes into the legislation that was passed last year. And so this is not actually a Board of Pharmacy bill, although the Board of Pharmacy does support the bill.
Doctor, could you pull your microphone close?
Sorry. Better?
Much better. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I am sorry. So just to explain what remains in the bill after the A1 amendment, and I believe that you have a color-coded version of the bill. I actually want to first refer you to the language that's highlighted in blue, which you'll probably note is most of the language throughout the bill. I think you can consider that in a way to be a bit of housekeeping. 2 years ago, I believe, the legislature directed the Board of Pharmacy to provide the legislature with an annual report on any changes that the board had made to the schedules through the rulemaking process. The intent of that bill was to align the schedules that are found in the statutes with the schedules that are found in the rules and the schedules that are found federally. That hasn't been done in quite some time, so right now if you take a look at the schedules that are found in the statutes and those in the rules, they're actually very different. So the blue language is already found in the rules. These are already scheduled drugs, in effect. Prosecutors can already prosecute based on the schedules found in the rules. However, a number of county prosecutors have indicated that they would rather see this measure taken so that there's no confusion between the rules and statutes. The language highlighted in yellow primarily deals with the synthetic cannabinoids, which sometimes individuals refer to as fake pot or synthetic marijuana. And the legislature did take an approach last year involving what is known as analog legislation to deal with the synthetic cannabinoids and also synthetic stimulants and hallucinogens. And that has had an impact. Most of the shops in Minnesota that sold those products have removed those from their inventory and are not selling them. But there are a few who are trying to get along around the law and who are claiming essentially that the analog provision is not constitutional, I believe. And so in the interim, worked on another approach, which is used by several other states, initially developed in the United Kingdom. I think it was actually an approach that during a hearing last year Senator Harrington might have referred to. And what this does and how it's different from the analog language is under the current analog language, a county prosecutor would have to prove that a drug is a particular chemical category and would also have to prove that it is pharmacologically active in the brain at cannabinoid receptors. And it's that second part I understand that's difficult for them. I think there are some prosecutors who are going to elaborate on that. What this new language does for the synthetic cannabinoids and also actually for synthetic stimulants is it lists specific chemical categories that are known to be synthetic cannabinoids, and then it lists the sort of changes that can be made to those categories that are commonly made by the people who are trying to tweak the molecules to get around the law. And it simply says that if a drug is in one of those categories, it is a synthetic cannabinoid, even if one of those tweaks have been made. There's no need to prove that it's pharmacologically active. So I'm told I worked with the BCA on this language, and I think they're here to testify, and I'm told that that would make it easier for them to testify in cases involving this. The language highlighted in pink, I'm not going to address that much. That's out of the realm or purview of the Board of Pharmacy. That's the criminal penalty phases that Senator Newman has already explained. The language highlighted in green adds more synthetic hallucinogens and stimulants to the schedules. It does so in terms of the stimulants, much in the way that I just explained for the synthetic cannabinoids. And that is the language that remains in the bill. I certainly can answer any questions any of the senators may have.
Any questions? We also have others that wish to give testimony. So at this time, we don't have questions. We'll keep going through the testifiers. And I think members, unless there's a specific question to ask, and with this type of subject matter, you might trigger it. For the most part, I'd like to keep our conversation after testimony, but I can see where we might want to ask a clarifying question. Sheriff Stanek.
Got a few props for you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Sheriff. Could you identify yourself for the record?
Sure. Good evening, Mr. Chair members. My name is Rich Stanek, Sheriff in Hennepin County. I'm here on behalf of both the citizens of Hennepin County as well as the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. And we're here, Mr. Chair members, in support of Senate File 2315, As you know, this is a second run at attempting to ban synthetic drugs from our communities. Synthetic drug abuse is a growing problem across Minnesota and the nation. A study by the Office of National Drug Control Policy released just a few months ago, back in December of 2011, estimated that slightly more than 1 in 10 12th graders in our high schools had used synthetic marijuana, making it the second most frequently used illicit substance after marijuana itself. And Mr. Chair, members, Minnesota's law enforcement groups feel that by passing this bill, you can help law enforcement and prosecutors protect our communities by sending a clear message that these substances are not safe nor legal. And let me talk briefly about what law enforcement is seeing in regards to these substances. Because these drugs are purchased in a local retail shop or sometimes on the Internet, kids might be more inclined to think they're safe to use. But clearly, Mr. Chair and members, they are not. The ingredients are not listed on the packaging. They are not regulated by the FDA. The users don't really know what chemicals are in these synthetic drugs. There's a reason why on the side of these packages it says, caution, use only as directed. This product is not for human consumption. And Mr. Chair, members, I mentioned I brought a couple samples. I wanted to show you what this looks like if you haven't had a chance. Mr. Chair, members, I'll pass these out provided I get them back at Dan because the detective's here to retain the chain of custody, and I do need them back. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Lads.
Can we advise the sheriff there's no smoking allowed in the Capitol?
Yeah. All right. Well, this one's going to be an illegal side. This one's going to be legal. Take a look at it, members, see if you can tell the difference between the two. We had these samples analyzed at the crime lab where it was determined that some of the baggies and vials contained the newly illegal chemical from last year, JWH-250. But others had one molecule changed to JWH-122 so that it could be legal. And this is what it looks like. I said, when you take a look at these packages, you'll see virtually the same. You can't tell the difference. These little vials, though, sold under the name of, you'll see, Black Mamba, which is a bubblegum flavor, Funky Monkey, Senator Latz, which is a blueberry flavor, and Scorpion King. They're priced anywhere from $10 to $15 for each of those little vials in the boxes wrapped up in the cellophane.
Sheriff, the two senators down here aren't passing these things down.
The chair members, I saw Senator Harrington eating White Castles before committee, so I'm relatively confident I'll get them back. Needless to say, people buy these and then they smoke it. That's what synthetic marijuana looks like, committee members. This is dangerous stuff. Just last spring, as you know, there was a death out in Blaine, Minnesota, from synthetic drugs purchased on the Internet. And last year, this Minnesota legislature, you folks, took that bold first step at addressing this problem with the passage of Senator Hall's bill, which made the chemical JWH-250 illegal. But if laws are like dams, then criminals are like water. Water's always trying to find a way to get around a dam. Did you get that, Senator McGuire? Right. Criminals are always looking for a way to make a profit without caring whether their victims live or die. And by changing one molecule on the JWH-250 chemical, the drug pushers out there can claim that current law cannot touch the sellers of these dangerous drugs. And, in fact, all of these samples that you've seen passed around the room, I have a label on them that states, does not contain JWH-250. The danger is just as great. Users do not know what they're getting. Pushers do not know what they're selling. And emergency room doctors and medical trained professionals do not know what they're treating a patient for when they present themselves at the emergency rooms. And that's what's happened to so many young people who are hospitalized across the country and across the state for the use of synthetic drugs. Mr. Chair, members, I'm asking you to broaden the law you passed last year to make it easier to take away the business licenses and bring charges against the pushers who want to peddle these unknown or deadly mixtures to our young people. And by passing this bill, you can help law enforcement by sending a clear message that these substances are not safe nor legal in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Sheriff Sanek. Gordon Ramsey. Chief Ramsey, welcome to the committee again.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Gordon Ramsey. I'm the Chief of Police in Duluth. I'm also the Vice President of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. I just want to talk real briefly about the impact on Duluth and some of our contact with it and what is happening up there. You hear it called synthetic marijuana from time to time. This is anything but synthetic marijuana. This is more like LSD sprayed on paper. The only difference is this is sprayed on a leafy substance and smoked. The behavior of those that use this drug is more like LSD or meth. You may hear some people speak tonight that this is similar to marijuana, and that simply is not true. It couldn't be further from the truth. You talk to the Duluth cops on the street or our RNs or our doctors in our emergency rooms, and they will tell you it is very different than marijuana. Duluth has kind of become ground zero in this issue. We have a business there downtown that made about $6 million last year on the sale of this substance. It's had an impact on our emergency rooms and our police calls. It's had a tremendous negative effect on the businesses surrounding this business downtown. He sells it for about $5.99 a gram. Marijuana right now is selling between $15 and $50 a gram. We've actually seen some of our downtown panhandlers that used to panhandle for the 60-ounce malt liquor now are panhandling for this synthetic drug. We've seen an increase in the police calls as well as just the overall quality of life downtown. We have a lot more, sorry my crudeness, but we're seeing vomit. We're seeing other bodily fluids from people that are using this drug. It makes them sick. The long-term effects now, so it's been used up in Duluth for a good year and a half. We've seen a lot of habitual users. We're seeing that the behavior is paranoia, depression. And the ERs and the folks in the hospitals are begging us to do more. Unfortunately, you know, our hands are kind of tied given the current law. Substance availability is everything with this drug, and it is very available. Anytime during the day, there is a line of 15 to 70 people outside of this business lined up to get the drug. We also want to ensure that this is at the felony level. The reasons being, one, is that there's a lot of money that's being made with this, and a misdemeanor charge simply would not, you know, the consequences would be worth the reward. If we could forfeit the profits in the case of felonies, I think it's very important. Also, the impact on the those selling it, the fact that we could get stronger probation, terms of probation and whatnot is important. I think the big key that I wanted to stress tonight is that this is not like marijuana, and it's having a huge impact on our business community and the safety and health of our young people. I handed out some pictures where people are buying the drug with their kids present, using the drug with their kids present, as well as a little story the News Tribune did on what is happening in the Duluth. Thank you very much for hearing this, and we appreciate your attention to it. Thanks.
Thank you, Chief. Frank Dolish. I hope I pronounce that name right. Director, welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Frank Dolish. I'm the director of the BCA Laboratory. I'm here today to tell you that we have been working very closely with Dr. Weinberg on this bill. Does make some major improvements in for us in comparison to the current law with the addition of the language that allows us to use the structure of the chemical rather than seeing whether or not it's an analog or in the case of the cannabinoids, whether it's a receptor agonist, which our scientists do not have the background to be able to provide testimony that would support a prosecution of those compounds under current law. With the changes, my staff will be able to testify whether the new drugs would meet the chemical structural language that's in the bill. The bill also adds a number of the synthetics that we've been seeing more recently out around the state that were missed last year when we tried to cover this the last time. And in a press conference that was held, I think it was last week, on the House version of this bill, the Commissioner of Public Safety did say that she does support this bill as well. I would like to say that I would reiterate what some others have said, and that is that please don't think that because some people refer to this as synthetic pot or synthetic marijuana, that the synthetic cannabinoids are equivalent to it. They're not. They're much more potent, sometimes 100 times more potent than those compounds that occur naturally. I was going to try to bring an article, but I need to, and I'll provide it to the committee later, but I need to see whether I have permission, copyright permission, to get copies of it. It's an article in Discover Magazine, the March issue, that's called Chemists of the Shadows, and it covers, it's about synthetic cannabinoids, the synthetic stimulants, as well as steroids, but and the danger of these compounds. And I think it's a well-written article that really makes a case for why these compounds should be controlled. We don't know how they're being made. We don't know who's making them, and there's absolutely no control. So I think Dr. Weinberg in his testimony in the House mentioned that it's like playing Russian roulette. You never know what these things, what you're going to get, what the purity is, what how it's going to affect you. And I think that if we keep going down this road, we're going to have more deaths than we've had already.
Thank you, Director. Chief Deputy Attorney Tom Wiedes?
Wiedes.
Mr. Chairman. Would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Tom Wiedes, W-E-D-E-S. I'm the Chief Deputy at Isani County Attorney's Office, and I'm here also representing the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Listening to the speakers prior to me coming up, we echo what has been presented to this committee. Prosecution and the intent of trying to prosecute the previous law that was passed is difficult without the changes that are being proposed. These designer synthetic drugs are ever-changing, and it is difficult to prosecute the cases when they have changed just by a minute portion. So the testing from the BCA, the requirement with the BCA that is needed to prosecute these cases, the enforcement of these types of laws is necessary with the changes that are being presented.
So. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Christy Stokes.
Mr. Chair, if I might, one of the reasons that we asked one of the reasons that we asked Ms. Stokes to come tonight is she is president of our Greater Downtown Business Council, and as you heard Chief Ramsey say before, we have a business, and this is their business, and it has not only had significant detrimental impacts on the people that are using this product, but on our entire downtown. And so, you know, we've heard a lot from law enforcement on that side, but I thought it would be helpful for the committee to hear from somebody who's working hard on the business side of this issue as well.
Thank you,
Ms. Stokes, welcome to the committee.
Yes.
Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Christy Stokes, I'm the president of the Greater Downtown Council, and as Senator Reinert mentioned, we focus on promotion and supporting development in our downtown. So I'm here to really give you a little bit more of a feel of how this really impacts the business community, specifically those that are right next to a shop that is selling this. The bill you're hearing today would actually, in my mind, return a voice to many of our businesses that are really suffering the consequences of a neighboring retailer who just challenges the existing law and profits from the sale of synthetic drugs out of this downtown storefront. We have seen in our downtown significant investment and reinvestment, but unfortunately, it really seems that that is being overshadowed by the negatives related to the sale of synthetic drugs. As Chief Ramsey mentioned, long lines of customers trail down a main city block as they wait to purchase their fix. At times, we actually even have confrontations between those customers that are waiting in line and the neighboring businesses because they are trying to get customers in their own doors. Litter, debris, and vomit are now a commonplace thing that we see in a route between the store and a neighboring park right in the core of our downtown. Just to give you some examples, since July 1st of last year, one neighboring business owner has seen walk-in sales drop $500 to $1,000 a day. Another has terminated evening classes because of all of these confrontations, and one has even locked her doors during actual daytime business hours because of this. Lucky for our community, many of these business owners are actual property owners as well. So they have a healthy investment. They've invested in the properties. They've invested in the buildings, and they are there and committed to our downtown. What I would say is if they were just tenants in our downtown, I really fear that we would be losing an entire block and have vacant storefronts just because of this, due to the frustration, the challenges, and a drop in business. The broader language in this legislation really, I think, provides some more teeth. It provides additional tools for the police as well as the prosecutors, and it brings forward those tougher consequences, consequences that really mean that we can take back our neighborhood and let our businesses get back to doing the things that they do so well. So I just want to close in saying that in downtown Duluth, we have a jewel of a central business district that has seen tremendous revitalization, and we hope you agree that this is there is great benefit in supporting a bill like this to help us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stokes. Randy Quast.
Chairman, if you don't mind, I'm not feeling well, and so I'm going to have a fellow board member from
that would
Minnesota
be fine.
Normal testify.
That would be fine.
His name's Kurt Hanna.
All right. Mr. Hanna, welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Curtis Hanna. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I'm a board member with the Minnesota chapter of NORMAL, which is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the author mentioned at the beginning of the bill introducing the bill tonight, a lot of the language contained within this bill is barely resembles English. It's very hard to really understand what a lot of these substances are. I just wanted to make the board aware of a couple of different items just to give some context to what this bill is about and kind of the things that have happened last year and the year before relating to the drug laws in Minnesota. But before that, I just wanted to mention the main topic that I came to speak against today was actually removed in the A1 amendment today. So I'm very happy with that amendment, and I applaud the board for passing it. Getting to the context, last year the omnibus drug bill that was passed was HF 57, and in that bill, the legislature decided that the Board of Pharmacy no longer can remove any substance at all from Schedule 1. The reason for this bill was actually because of a petition that I had sent to the Board of Pharmacy, I believe a year and a half prior, asking them to remove a substance that does have medical value in the United States from Schedule 1. And I would like to just read a couple of different very short quotes from First, the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. What is being amended today is the Minnesota version of the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. There's also a federal component, which I believe a lot of these substances are now being added because of the federal changes. In the preface of the Uniform Act, it specifically states that the Act is supposed to update and improve existing state laws and ensure that legislative and administrative flexibility is in place to enable the states to cope with both present and future drug problems. I quote that because there is a lack of flexibility in the Schedule I categorization currently. Like I said earlier, just last May, the legislature had passed a bill making it so the board cannot remove any substances. The second is a court case from Tennessee. It's from a Supreme Court case. It says that at the outset, it should be noted that the area of drug control is one in which some form of delegation by the legislature of discretionary authority to an agency is particularly necessary. To be effective, a drug control program must be reviewed continuously and adjusted when necessary in the light both of new drugs coming onto the market and of new knowledge concerning old drugs. The legislature, by its nature, has neither the facilities nor the experience to assume this task. Furthermore, because the legislature is not in continuous session, it cannot give the drug control program constant attention, the lack of which could result in a dangerous drug being widely disseminated throughout the state before effective controls were instituted. And that is what's happening currently. It is right that if there is a drug that is causing problems within the state, it makes sense to make that a controlled substance and to regulate it. But in this case, we're putting these substances, many of which, like was said, are very hard to understand what they actually are, into Schedule I, which the Board of Pharmacy cannot remove, even when a petitioner goes to the board and lets them know that that substance no longer meets the criteria of a Schedule I substance. Schedule I substances are defined in Minnesota statutes as having no accepted medical value in the entire United States. So that means that if another state were to remove something from their own Schedule I classification, it should be mimicked in this state law. That current flexibility is not available. And I would ask that that be brought to the legislature's attention today when we are putting a lot of these substances in. I just have a couple more points. I won't be too much longer. So the question mainly is that what happens if evidence does come available in the future of the medical value of a substance that is currently being made a Schedule I substance today? The substance that I was alluding to earlier in the petition that I sent to the Board of Pharmacy, I assume that you already know, is cannabis. And that is actually a substance that 16 state laws and the District of Columbia, with congressional approval, have decided should not be a Schedule I substance. I'm not asking for an amendment today to remove cannabis from Schedule I, but I'm just saying that that is a test case for substances. When they are put into Schedule I, it is extremely difficult for the general public to remove anything from it. And by removing the Board of Pharmacy's authority to take anything out of Schedule I, the legislature itself has assumed the authority to remove substances. Two more points. I do want to show the board page 7. It specifically states that section H says marijuana, tetrahydrocannabinols, and synthetic cannabinoids are added to Schedule I. Marijuana currently is there. It has been since 1971. But I also wanted to show the committee today page 19 of the bill that's before the board. And that specifically states on subsection G, hallucinogenic substances, and then it has the substance dronabinol. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's also called Marinol. And this specifically says in quotations synthetic. And what that is synthetic THC. So this bill is currently placing that in Schedule 3, which is a synthetic cannabinoid. And at the same exact time is putting other substances in Schedule 1, which are also synthetic cannabinoids. So there seems to be a due process, a equal protection violation here, that certain individuals, if they have a large amount of money, they're able to go to their pharmacist and get a pill form of synthetic marijuana, but they are not able to go down the street to an establishment and get a very, very similar product. And if the committee here would like to regulate a substance, I suggest that it be equally applicable across the board. And secondly, a lot of these substances are being added to Schedule 1, not because of the substance itself having some sort of scientific proof that this has no medical value, because it's very hard to prove that it has no medical value. The problem with a lot of these substances is that we don't know what's in it. It's a matter of improper labeling that people that are buying these substances don't know what's in it. They use them, and then it causes them a lot of harm. So I would recommend that be considered as well. And my last point is there seems to also be a double standard in the fact that there's 5,000 deaths every single year for tobacco. And that is something that is highly regulated, but it is on every single corner, including in Duluth. I bet there's probably 5 or 6 places within 2-block radius of the last place on Earth, which is currently selling these synthetic cannabinoids, and also alcohol. There was some jokes earlier about the names of these substances, but I don't think that those are too much different than, you know, very exotic liquor names like Captain Morgan or Hot 100 or something of that sort. So I just wanted to bring these issues to the committee's attention. I appreciate everyone's time, and I do also appreciate the hard work that you guys are doing on behalf of Minnesota citizens. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me speak today.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer. Is there anyone else?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Are you going to wait with questions?
Yes, we were.
Thank you.
Mr. Charlie Clippert. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Clippert. Would you identify yourself for the record?
I sure will. My name is Charles. My last name is Clippert, C-L-I-P-P-E-R-T. And I'm a member of the Minnesota Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. And I'm up here. I've just got a couple things I'd like to point out in the bill. And my first is one concern is that you have two definitions in here of a Schedule 1 substance. Subdivision 7, paren 1, has one definition. Your new definition in Subdivision 8A does not, they're not consistent. And as criminal law practitioners, if there's something that's inconsistent in the bills, that's going to drive everybody nuts. So this is we can't have two classes of Schedule I drugs. It's going to cause people concern. And while I appreciate the issues with the synthetic marijuana, reviewing the penalty provisions in here, I'm very concerned about the difference between the sale for no remuneration of marijuana, which is a straight petty misdemeanor. It's a civil infraction with a fine only, versus making a sale for no remuneration of the synthetic marijuana a gross misdemeanor. That's the second highest level of charge that Minnesota has. Minnesota has a petty, fine-only misdemeanor, which is punishable up to 90 days, a gross, which is up to a year, and then a felony is anything over a year and a day. Basically, you're making a sale for no remuneration the same as a repeat DWI offender, and I wonder whether that's the appropriate level. I'm also concerned that the sale for remuneration contains no weight or no dollar amount. So the minute you start selling synthetic marijuana for a buck, you're making a felon. And it seems like there should be some threshold level there on the sale to make that a more rational comparison to regular marijuana. And again, I'm not saying that the synthetic isn't different and dangerous, but still, to go from selling a synthetic for a dollar to make you a felon, just it seems like there should be some proportionality there. And then my only other question is, I noticed that Minnesota was a signer to the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. I don't know what the other signers are doing on this bill. I kind of got the call late to come up here, so I just think we might be curious to see what those other states are doing. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Clippert, there has been some changes to the bill. We had a delete or a bill, an amendment that may have alleviated some of your concern on definition. I'll have counsel explain that to you. Mr. Backus?
Mr. Chair, members, yeah, the witness had a number of points, but one of the points had to do with the subdivision 8A on page 25, which had a very similar language relating to a Schedule 1, but it only applied to expedited rulemaking. In any event, all of that language has been deleted from the bill, so at least on that point, the bill no longer contains that.
And I apologize, the latest version online was March 7th.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Backus, was there any other issues that you believe? Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak for or against the bill? We'll open for questions. Sir Ingebrigtsen, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some, probably not questions, just some comments. I'm not sure who put the document out. I guess Leslie Davis, Earth Protector Incorporated. It's in our packet.
Right.
Just like to make some comments with regards to that. And some comments about the photographs, Mr. Chair, if I could, that were passed out, and just comments in general with regards to the what appears to be a document here saying we should be legalizing drugs. Some of the points were made here that I'd like to talk about, making our streets and homes safer, quite frankly. In my 35 years in the business that I came from, I can testify that it makes it much more dangerous. And to prison overcrowding, I guess if we let the dealers out, that would be a jobs bill. We're all about jobs. I don't take this stuff lightly. I'm not joking about it, Mr. Chair and members. I think this is something that is very serious. Reduce official corruption. I guess we're talking about organized crime. So if we legalize every illegal activity, we don't have to worry about organized crime. I think that's what we should do in this country. Make our streets a lot safer that way. I think not. Save the taxpayers money and raise new revenues. I'm assuming they're talking about we can raise taxes if we make drugs legal and sell them. And again, crippling organized crime. There's other ways to do it. And starting that top sentence there, the war on drugs has always been something that's just been amazing to me that we're losing. And quite frankly, the very good men and women that go out in uniform and undercover are, in my estimation, not losing the war. But if so, we are losing the war. This is a war that's worth fighting. I've watched several documentaries on TV just recently about the war on marijuana coming across the border, and there's no question about it. If we wanted to do something that was worthwhile when it comes to protecting our children, which is very obvious we have to start doing by the documents I'm seeing here handed out today, we should be doing that at the border, and none of the stuff should be coming in, and we should get very serious about it. So, Mr. Chair and members, you've heard from the law enforcement practitioners, the prosecutors, just in general, you know, the jails are full, and I know they're saying they're full of drug dealers, and drugs are if we just quit doing that, we wouldn't have our jails full. Frankly, the jails are full, and a lot of them are drug dealers, and what happens when the jails are full? I think the chief will attest to very clearly, when the jails are full, crime is down. Nobody can argue that fact. And if it's drug dealers, quite frankly, we're taking a lot of that off the street, away from our kids. I'm looking at the Duluth Times here that was passed around. I'm looking at this picture of somebody so proudly, I guess, posing for a photograph, and I quite frankly couldn't tell whether it was a male or female. And what that picture tells me is that the drugs we're talking about here and the ones we talked about the last couple of years are gateway drugs to meth, because it's very obvious this person's been on meth. I can't tell whether it's a male or a female, other than by the name. So thank you, Senator Newman and Reinhart, for bringing this forward. I think we should take a very serious look at Minnesota, and we should be the leader in making all these types of drugs illegal and make the streets safe for our kids. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if someone of the technical experts could answer this question. I understand that NDUST, the material that you spray on computer keyboards to keep them dust-free, contains a chemical that's also listed in this bill. I wonder if that's the case what, if anything, we can do about it. So I guess that's my first question, and I'll have another one after that.
Dr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, I do not know the answer to that question. This is the first I've heard that a commercial product might have one of these chemicals in it. I certainly can take a look at that to see if that might be the case. That's not something that I've heard of before.
Mr. Chairman, I guess that leads to another question, which is there some kind of a provision, because there are a lot of chemicals in this bill, so is there some kind of provision whereby, short of subsequent legislative action, we could deal with a situation where a lawful commercial product may contain a chemical that happens to be in this list without criminalizing everyone who is selling NDUST or whatever the product might happen to be?
Director Dolan.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, the dust off that you're talking about, they use in what they call huffing, where they're inhaling the solvent that's in dust off. And I'm right now my brain is not coming up with the chemical name. It's not included on this list, and I don't think that it should be, because in those instances, if you're going to try to cover that, you can be huffing gasoline, you can be huffing Freon, and I don't know that there's a way that in terms of making them, I don't think you want to make them a controlled substance. There may be another approach. In fact, I thought there was another bill that was trying to get at this in terms of DWI and driving. And again, I couldn't tell you what the bill number on that is and who the author is, but they're not trying to cover it as a controlled substance, but just as a compound that would impair your driving ability.
Sir Lance.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that answer. My second question has to do with my concern for Senator Harrington's health. Do we know if White Castle has any chemicals in it that are in this bill?
Oh, boy. Shot over the bow.
Throw some. White Castle's good for you.
White Castle's. On a more serious note, though, I do have a third question, which has to do with a comment that was raised by Mr. Clippert, and that was the jump to felony penalties for the sale of a substance, even for a quarter, it could be the way the bill is written. Do we have any other statutes in which it's comparable in that way, where there's, you know, where there's a distinction between a sale for no remuneration and a sale for some remuneration? I suppose our controlled substance statutes, if I remember them correctly, do already say that, you know, any sale of certain kinds of substances are a sale crime, no matter the amount. But maybe I could be more enlightened on that.
Dr. Weiberg?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz,
could you pull the microphone up?
Law enforcement agency, and it's not our area of expertise. I can explain a little bit with my discussions on the House side as to how that was arrived at. The discussion was around increasing the penalties for synthetic cannabinoids because in the bill that was passed last session, sale was a gross misdemeanor, possession was a misdemeanor. And the concern was, the initial thought was to increase the sale to a penalty, but the thought was there may be, for example, young people in their late teens, early 20s who are sharing the product, and would you want to prosecute them at a felony level if they weren't really out there dealing this in a major way? That was the thought process in the House for making the sale for no remuneration a gross misdemeanor rather than a felony. On the other hand, I think the gross misdemeanor level might have been chosen because of the fact that although this was not a synthetic cannabinoid that was involved in the Blaine deaths, it was that those were synthetic stimulants. Nevertheless, what happened in that case was someone bought it on the internet and then shared it with about nearly a dozen friends, all of whom ended up in the hospital and one of whom ended up dead. So that, again, that explains, I think, the rationale that went into this from the author and the staff on the House side. But again, our area is not criminal law, so.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lantz, I really don't know the answer to your question, but the thought occurs to me that, you know, when I look at the picture of the store that's in operation up in Duluth, I can envision a situation in which, you know, very small amounts are being sold over and over and over again. And it's been represented to me that this store has got a gross sales, annual sales of like $6 million. So I think a legitimate argument could be made in terms of proportionality. But how do we deal with a situation like what is going on at Duluth if we reduce it to a very small amount of money and this storefront is obviously pretty successful? So that's just my thoughts, Senator Lantz.
Senator Lantz.
Mr. Chairman, just in terms of the discussion here, if selling the substance is illegal, just period, you can shut the store down. That's the end of it. Doesn't have to be more than a misdemeanor. Just to stop the sale of the substance itself if it's illegal to do so, you know, the store gets shut down. Isn't that more in the definition of what substances are illegal than in the penalty?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Again, Senator Latz, just a thought, but someplace along the line in my discussion on this bill, that question did come up, and my initial response, my initial thought was, for the kind of money that we are talking about with this particular storefront, if you shut me down, I'd just move. I'd go someplace else.
Dr. Weiberg, when we were studying and reacting to the analog substances last year, I remember a couple headlines where two young people had died as a result of using analog substances. And I think now as these substances get more, they're kind of morphing and they're in the design element. And they're billed as maybe something that is safe to use. Could you tell us, is there a danger to the substances that we're considering now? And is it a life and death issue? And would that justify a felony charge because of the danger that it is presenting?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in my opinion, yes, the felony charge would be justified. Even though we're not law enforcement side, I can certainly speak to the danger of the drugs. And basically, the problem with the synthetic cannabinoids, the synthetic stimulants, hallucinogens, which the latter two were made felony last year, The problem with the synthetic cannabinoids, some of it's already been mentioned. One is that they are not simply versions of the active ingredients that are in marijuana, the main one being THC. They are, as someone else testified to, much more potent. That's one problem with it. The other problem is that these drugs are not made up to FDA-approved manufacturing standards. The Star Tribune ran an article where they actually went down to, I think it was Missouri, and they got someone willing to take them out to the back 40 and show them the rickety trailer house that he was cooking this stuff up in. And that's not FDA standard manufacturing. And so what happens, and why I've likened this to Russian roulette, is even if a person buys the exact same product that they have bought before, it's in the same wrapping, it says it's the same thing, they do not know from package to package what they're getting. Because of the standards and the manufacturing aren't there, at one point they could buy several different packs of this product over a period of time and happen to get packets that have a low potency. Not a low potency, but a low quantity of the drug. The fourth time that they buy it, they could get something that is 10 times more potent than what they're used to buying. And so they're used to taking the dose, they're used to getting whatever effect that they want to get, and they're not having problems. But that fourth time could be the time that they have significant problems. The other thing that I'd like to point out with the synthetic cannabinoids is when somebody gets plain marijuana, they are, if it's not adulterated and cut with something else, it's very unusual for them to get into a situation where they wind up in the emergency room with things like a rapid heart rate, dangerously low potassium levels, being in a coma, being severely agitated, being severely paranoid, and having severe hallucinations. Some of the deaths that have been associated with synthetic cannabinoids are actually suicides due to the hallucinations that the drugs cause. So these drugs are far more dangerous than regular marijuana is.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Latz.
So it sounds like what I'm hearing is that the synthetic cannabinoids, the stuff dealt with in this bill, they're really more equivalent as drugs to other drugs that are already classified as felony level possession or sales. In effect, whether it's because of the chemicals in the drugs or because of the variation in quality of production. Is that what I'm hearing, sir? Is that what you're telling us?
Dr. Wiper?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, that's exactly what I'm telling you, yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman?
Chair Latz.
So another way of thinking of it then is if the appropriate penalty really is a felony, then in a sense we're giving something of a break down to a gross misdemeanor level for those who are just sharing it person to person without selling it, rather than upcharging, if you will, from a gross to a felony. I mean, I guess that's the flip side of the analysis. The only other thing I'm a little concerned about is, you know, we've only had 1 year's experience since we passed this law last year, actually less than 1 year's experience. The effective date was probably last August. And already we're jumping from a gross misdemeanor to a felony. And so part of the question is what has changed between last year when the legislature passed the gross misdemeanor and this year when we're considering making to it a felony without having much experience in the implementation of it as a gross.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, you know, that's really a good question, and the only way that I can answer it is that I'm going to call them street chemists for lack of a better description, are number one, they're ahead of us. And number two, there apparently is an enormous market for these drugs. And I view what is happening up in the city of Duluth as really a horror story. And I don't know that when I heard the bill last year, I ever anticipated hearing any kind of a story like
the storefront in Duluth, where a guy is making $6 million a year, and the customers are lined up out of the door and down the street and disrupting other law-abiding citizens. I guess my answer is, Senator Latz, I think we just underestimated the severity of the situation. I think we underestimated how dangerous these things are. And very honestly, the story that I'm hearing, remember back a few years ago, maybe 2005 or thereabouts, we were dealing with meth and the cooking of the meth out in the, in apartments and trailer houses. It was really extremely dangerous stuff. And this reminds me of the same thing, only we're dealing with a new chemical than meth. So I have absolutely no problem with going to a felony level as described in this bill.
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, on this discussion, it seems to me sometimes we use, and I'm not arguing in favor of it, but sometimes we have, especially in things like DWI, the impact on, if it results in death or something else, you enhance the penalty. The difficulty with these is it sounds like it depends on the situation and the mixture and so on. One time it could be absolutely deadly, like at one case, other times it might be relatively mild. I would suggest that I think you could more than put a guy out of business. You could, even if you had for small amounts of sale, because I assume law enforcement can, the prosecutors can aggregate. If I'm selling a little bit to you and a little bit to the next guy in line, a little bit to the next guy, I'm selling $6 million a year of it. I assume you could get the felony charge in a few minutes on that, even if you had several. And I'm not saying that that's the way to do it, and I'm not arguing that doing the impact as we do for DWI. I mean, if you and I were both guilty of DWI and then I ended up killing somebody, I'd have a much more severe penalty than you, though we were both taking the same chances with somebody else. I'm not saying that this is a bad approach. I just was not sure I think it's appropriate that no remuneration is gross misdemeanor, but I don't know if small quantities of it, but I think you're going to get this guy out of business in 5 minutes anyway.
And Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Marty. I guess my feeling is that I'm going to go back to the fact that I believe that we're really dealing with a very very dangerous drug. I can't help but look at the pictures that the chief from Duluth brought in, and sitting right in the middle of the picture is this baby in a baby carriage in a store where this stuff is being purchased, I just believe it's. I think this is really dangerous stuff, and if we jack it up to a felony level for sale, what I'm frankly hoping is that there is going to be some deterrent that is going to enter the equation, and hopefully they won't be selling this stuff.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been listening to the testimony, and I was just wondering if you could address Senator Newman, and maybe you were going to do this, but one of the testifiers, I believe it was Mr. Quast, is that who was testifying about the flexibility that the board might need, or equal applicability of these across the board. So I'm wondering if you could address some of those concerns, and they sounded legitimate to me, and so I'm not opposed to your bill, but I do think we should be consistent, and I don't know, maybe we do need to give the board some flexibility so that we're not coming back here every year to make these kinds of changes. So I appreciate the issues that are going on in Duluth, and I want to help those out for sure, but at the risk of having us have a bill like this every year, if you could just comment on that.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Weiberg has indicated he'd like to answer that question.
Dr. Weiberg?
I will happily defer to him.
Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire, just a couple comments.
Okay.
I'll deal with the one about the comparison between the drug dronabinol, which is in Schedule 3, and the synthetic cannabinoids that are being added to Schedule 1. What the testifier failed to mention is that dronabinol is an FDA-approved drug. It has undergone rigorous scientific research. It is a synthetic form of the active ingredient in marijuana, THC. But it is, in fact, it has in fact undergone all of the studies that need to be undertaken in order to get a drug approved by the Food and Drug Administration. It has accepted medical uses because of that. The difference between dronabinol and the drugs that are being proposed to be placed in Schedule 1 is these other drugs have had, they have not had that sort of testing. They are not FDA-approved products. They have not been studied for medical use in individuals. The other thing is that the language at the beginning of Schedule 1 that's been in there for quite some time basically talks about, or actually it's in each, section of Schedule 1 talks about the fact that I'll just do it from memory. It talks about the fact that unless otherwise scheduled, the drug is in that schedule, which means dronabinol is scheduled in Schedule 3, so it's automatically excluded from what gets into Schedule 1. The reason that that's done is there are times when drugs are rescheduled federally. And if drugs are rescheduled federally, for example, if a drug that's currently in Schedule 1, if the Drug Enforcement Administration, in working with the FDA, remove that drug from Schedule 1 and put it into, say, Schedule 2, the board still does have the authority to reschedule the drug and put it in Schedule 2. But that would mean that the DEA, working with the FDA, has determined that the drug has an accepted medical use, and then the DEA has agreed that it can be in Schedule 2. I hope that answers your question.
He didn't testify.
Senator McGuire, could I bring you to page 4, lines 12 and 13?
Yes.
That may help define some of that.
Page 4 of the bill.
12
Mr.
and 13. We do have a little bit of a qualifier on the language. Page 4, 12, and 13, where it says unless specifically accepted or unless listed in another schedule.
Okay.
Does that help?
It helps a bit, and I just wanted to get the ask for the response to those concerns because they
sure.
They were legitimate concerns and as far as I was concerned. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Sarah Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Newman. I just have one question. I just want to make sure that we don't do anything as embarrassing as the Tennessee legislature did several years ago. They banned a chemical, and I think it was on the advice of the pharmacists, but they banned a chemical that was used in drugs, and they found out after they banned it and after the legislature was done that it was a chemical that was also used in the manufacturing of tires. And evidently, Tennessee has a lot of tire manufacturers, so they couldn't manufacture their tires for several months until they had a special session and took that chemical off. So I respect your judgment that the pharmacist definitely on what makes up these chemicals for these synthetic drugs, but I don't know if you know even whether or not these chemicals are included in any other type of manufacturing that is legal. Has anybody checked that out?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Senator Goodwin, I am going to let Mr. Weiberg answer that question because, quite honestly, when it comes to the chemical makeup of the drugs that are listed and the uses of them, I have to rely on him. I simply do not
Great.
Have the expertise. So perhaps Mr. Weiberg could answer that question.
Dr. Weiberg?
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, The way Representative Barrett usually puts it is he defers any questions involving words with more than three syllables to me. To answer your question, I have not specifically checked if every single one of these chemicals is used in some manufacturing process. That would actually be a pretty gargantuan task, given all the products that there are. However, in the research that we've done, we feel fairly confident that these drugs are not used. Partially answer your question and partially also to talk about the testimony about the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. This particular approach with synthetic cannabinoids actually originated in the United Kingdom, and it has been used by several other states so far, including North Dakota and the state of Kansas. So I do not really believe that these would be used in another industrial process. I'm not 100% sure, but the drug that you may be referring to in Tennessee may have been a drug called gamma butyrolactone.
Or something big like that.
Which is in fact an industrial solvent, but it is also closely related to one of the drugs that is a date rape drug. And so that could have been what they banned, not realizing that it had industrial uses. And I would agree the proper way to do that would be to carve out an exception for that use. But to the best of my knowledge, I don't believe any of these chemicals would have any other industrial uses.
I had a question for Senator Reinert. Senator Reinert, in your estimation in this bill, does this bill does it do anything to endanger the tire industry in Duluth?
We need to know.
It's all about jobs, Senator Reinert.
Mr. Chair, you put me on the spot.
Firing minds.
Not in Duluth, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
To that point, Mr. Chair, to Senator Goodwin's idea of us being careful not to pass a law that might mess up some kind of a product is certainly well taken. I think the legislature, before my time, Senator Limmer was here, I'm sure, and Senator Marty, when they dealt with the meth labs in Minnesota by making the substances that you could buy across the counter, actually you had to sign up for them. So they were very well aware of what could possibly be messed up for the production of anything else. I mean, after all, the meth they were using anhydrous ammonia, batteries, matchsticks, and things like that, and we certainly wouldn't want to. I mean, that's what they make this stuff out of, and right. They put it into their system. So we should be aware of not making those things illegal. But I like the description of the doctor talking about the unknown, not knowing what's coming. And that, to me, is scary enough when you purchase these things. And the question I have, or another concern I have, is you make a felony. Now, the first time around, I think the prosecutors in this room will probably admit they're not going to go to jail on the first felony. But making it a felony is going to give prosecutors and law enforcement another tool, because if they're foolish enough to do this the second time around, they belong in prison, quite frankly. There was a day years ago that when you got charged with a felony, you went to prison for some period of time. So I like it for that. But I did like the analogy. And is it fair to say, Doctor, that with the meth labs going away, it has not solved the meth problem in Minnesota? We are just now simply getting a purer form of poison, better form of poison, coming out of the South?
Dr.
Onto our streets?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that is my understanding. Again, the Board of Pharmacy doesn't directly deal with illicit drugs, the distribution of illicit drugs, but I have done a lot of research on the issue, primarily because some of the components that are used to make methamphetamine, as you pointed out, are sold behind the counter now in pharmacies. And when the legislature enacted that legislation, it directed the BCA to work with the Board of Pharmacy to determine whether or not there ought to be an electronic system to track those sales. And so periodically go back to that issue and review it. And my understanding is two things are actually happening now. And someone from the BCA might might testify to this too. But yes, I think there's a lot of methamphetamine coming from Mexico. Unfortunately, as laws are made, the individuals who make these drugs try to get around them and try to be creative. And so before, where you might have heard of meth labs that literally you might find out about them because the thing exploded and burnt the house down, there's a new method you may or may not be aware of called the shake and bake method, where they've altered the ingredients that they use, and they put it in a 2-liter plastic pop bottle, and they shake it up. Now, my understanding is that that sort of meth lab in miniature is on the rise again, and the problem of individuals trying to buy pseudoephedrine, trying to get around the system, is starting to increase again. And so there's talk again about potentially requiring some sort of an electronic tracking system at some point. About 20 states have done that so far.
Thank you.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I'm just being reminded of the things that I come in contact with, or that I, you know, think about when I think of these kind of drugs. But does this have anything to do with medical marijuana? Does this bill have anything to do with that at all? Okay. And then my other question is, I'm just recently become aware of these hookah shops, which are these shops where people, I guess, smoke Turkish tobacco or something. And are you familiar with these? And are these affected by this at all? I know they're popping up in lots of different places.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Newitt.
I've never heard of that term. I don't think there's any in Hutchinson.
Okay. Just curious. I know.
There's a market. Where do you shop, Senator McGuire?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Well, Senator Harrington knows a little bit about it.
Dr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire, I'm not really familiar with hookah shops. I've seen what a hookah looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But if, in your description, if it's being used to smoke tobacco, there's nothing in this bill that about tobacco. Well, if it's being used to smoke synthetic cannabinoids,
then
this bill would affect it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none. Senator Newman, renews.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Best of my knowledge, the fiscal note came out with no fiscal impact whatsoever. So I think it would be appropriate to move the bill to the floor. And it would be my motion to move Senate File 2508 as amended to the floor and be recommended to pass and move it to the floor.
Senator Newman, I believe it's Senate File 2319 rather than 2508.
Oh, correct. Yeah, I'm sorry. I looked at the House file number. Yeah, right. 2319.
Senator Newman moves that Senate File 2319, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. There's no further business before the committee. We stand adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.